Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with National Library of Medicine Director, Dr. Donald Lindbergh. Also joining us in our conversation is Marion Ball. Dr. Lindbergh, many Americans may not realize the resources of the National Library of Medicine are available over the Internet. Can you tell our listeners about the breadth of your largest database, Medline? What was the process for making this information available electronically, and how often is the information updated?
Yeah, well, of course, there's always a long story about such things, but Medline is really an index to the biomedical scientific literature, and it actually started in 1879 in printed form, and it got to be computerized in a way of necessity starting in 1960 with the first actual computer-generated index printed in 1964. So within 4 years, they did all that, in the course of which a number of other inventions. And then by about 1970-71, it was apparent that if the computer could print this thing, that there was something called, which we now think of as a file or database, and then you could make inquiries of that file or database. And so that really, 70-71, is when it became possible to make online queries of that Medline file. The file was called Medline. In those days, they ran a six-week course for medical librarians in how to formulate the queries. And, of course, then they were processed online. So if somebody out in a hospital or a medical school or a doctor's office wanted to make a research question, you know, what are the articles about such and such a drug for such and such a disease, that would be done through a medical library, and it would be teletyped in, and then the search would be run, and the answer would come back, and maybe copies the articles or something. And that process probably would take weeks. And in those days, that was regarded as absolutely fantastic. I mean, I can remember when we would review grants at NIH, and it was standard to say the grant would start with 6 months for research. Now, that meant library research. That meant go someplace and find out what had other people done in this area that you were going to investigate. So the idea that this could be done in a week or two, that was lightning speed. So, you know, if you fast forward, of course, up to 2006, this is seconds. And people all over the world, not only Americans, but people in the U.S. first, of course, doctors and scientists and the public, can literally make that kind of a query online from home or office and get an answer right away. Whereas it started out as a guide to research, it has ended up doing that, but also guiding, being able to anyway guide medical decision making, both on the part of the doctor and of the patient.
Can you tell us who the target audience is for Medline and how many users you have in a given period? And what types of steps is the library taking to ensure that customers are satisfied with the service they receive from this database?
Right. Well, that's a good set of questions. I mean, I should say, first of all, that the Medline file is meant to serve physicians and scientists, basically. We discovered in 1998, when we, in 97, we started using Internet, in 98 we were able to make the service free. We discovered quickly that the public actually was very interested in this. And whereas we had thought that this information was for scientists and doctors, as I said, in reality, members of the public, if a person, let's say, had an illness in the family or with a friend or oneself, they were quite willing to read the thing more than once, to use a dictionary, at least, at the very least, have good questions to ask the doctor when they saw him or her. So we were astounded to discover that very quickly 30-40% of the use of the system came from non-scientists, non-doctors, you know, members of the public. So we designed a new system for them, which we call Medline Plus. Interestingly, these airtight compartments really are not so valid. So for instance, as I told you, the thing that we designed for the doctors, the patients actually were using. The thing we designed for the patients, amazingly enough, it has 700 health conditions, and we found that, you know, in the middle of the night, the doctors will creep in. And 20-25% of the use of Medline Plus is by physicians because, heck, I mean, how many doctors do you think are around that are fully familiar with 700 health conditions? I mean, outside of one's own specialty area, of course it's a good place to start. So those are two of the major if you will, information sources. There's a third one that you haven't asked about, but that's the National Center for Biotechnology Information and GenBank and all of the data that comes out of the Human Genome Project. So that has a more limited role. I mean, it's to serve the best genetic scientists in the world. But even there, David Lippmann and his folks have made a very serious effort to make that as accessible as possible, even down to the level of, let's say, junior high school. You know, with explanatory things so that literally kids in high school, and ergo college and med school as well, can literally use precisely the same search software that the best scientists in the whole world use. It's just that the latter, you know, will point and click a few extra times before they get down to the real details of the nucleotide sequences that characterize a gene or something. But all the data is available to everyone under exactly the same terms. You just have to know how to point and click.
Don, the databases that are talked about mainly, and you've given such a wonderful overview of Medline Plus and the genome database, there are so many other databases that you are responsible for at NLM, I think that the audience would like to hear about. Could you just tell us about some of them and possibly also the Visible Human Project?
Well, of course, our strategy, just like any other, I suppose, proprietor, is if a customer walks through the door, we want to show you not just with a pair of shoes, but some socks and scarf and gloves and all that. So Medline Plus that I spoke about will automatically link somebody to dictionaries for definitions, to encyclopedias. It will give explanatory information about those 700 health conditions. It'll do a search of the scientific file if one wants. It'll also go, we've discovered that the idea that people are trying to retrieve information is, I mean, that's commonly said, but it probably is a pretty fair mental model for scientists and maybe doctors, but it isn't a very good mental model, I don't think, for patients and families. I think that those individuals, when any of us is ill, and we ask for help, we're by and large asking to improve our understanding of something. We're not trying to get, you know, the formula of the antibiotic or something. And so consequently, in this Medline Plus thing, we've added, constantly adding and subtracting features to see if they help. But the feature called tutorials has been added precisely to improve understanding, to explain things in a more systematic fashion, not retrieve information, just explain it. For example, what is arthritis and what is the treatment and what are the diagnoses and what kind of people and the healthcare people, nurses and doctors, will you see and so forth. And this is done in a semi-cartooning strategy and with a system in which the explanatory information can be read. It can be spoken, in other words, by the computer. It's partly not necessarily to overcome illiteracy, but maybe even that and even poor vision on the older population. And it exists, of course, in Spanish as well as English. So that's been a very successful thing for us. And if we find another void, we'll jump on it. You wondered, how do we find out if we're doing a good job or not? And obviously, everyone in the information business has that same problem. Yes, you ask people, please email us, please phone us, please write us letters and so forth. And we do get a lot of that, and we pay attention to it. As I'd said, back in 97 and 98, when we first were given permission by the Congress, actually, to stop charging for the service, we lost the ability to know who our customers were. Because, I mean, if you had a customer number or a credit card number, we knew who you were. We could ask you, are we doing a good job or not? Or when we recognized that to serve the public was essential to do two things. One is it had to be totally free. I mean, you can't say, gee, I'd tell you if you'd only come up with a couple of dollars. And we found ways to radically reduce the cost of providing a service. And then the second thing that we found and still believe is critical is that you have to do it on an anonymous basis. You cannot ask people to identify themselves because then you're in the same business as those people who are on the, you know, legitimate commercial side, but basically they're selling eyeballs, so to speak. They're selling how many ads can I flash by you while you're telling me your problem. We stuck with free and we stuck with anonymous, and therefore the OMB gives us permission every once in a while to insert a kind of a query set of questions so we can get a direct feedback. But it is a little bit more difficult under those circumstances.
Does the National Library of Medicine have a global audience?
It does. It does. Yeah, probably 40% or a little bit better of the users are outside the U.S. And I was once asked in the Congress, particularly with respect to the human genome work, one of the members said, I've heard that you give free access to this stuff to overseas users, people, non-American users. And I said, yeah, that's true. And he said, well, what percentage of it? And I gave him just what I said, 40%. And he said, well, how do you justify that? And I said, well, 42% of the data come from overseas. I mean, the Human Genome Project is a global partnership. And of course, you have to give access back to the people who gave you the data.
So it's basically the world's information.
Yeah. It's the world's information. There's only one human genome.
Don, one of the other databases I think our audience would be very interested in is the clinical trials database and the roles that NLM has played in this tremendous initiative.
Well, that's an interesting one to me. Actually, we responded directly to a piece of legislation in 1997 called the FDA Modernization Act, FDAMA, so-called. In that, I would say that the Congress did a thing that not so infrequently can be observed, namely that they displayed, I would say, more common sense than the scientists. I mean, the Congress said, NIH, you're spending, I suppose it would then have been probably $25 or $26 billion a year, a great deal of which has to do with clinical trials. Why have you not come up with a database that the people can get at to find out, does a trial exist for a disease that, you know, I or a family member have? And we want you to do it. And the legislation essentially said the commissioner of FDA, the director of NIH, and the director of NLM will make. And so we took as marching orders. And the director of NIH then was Harold Varmus, and he asked me if NLM would do this on behalf of NIH. And he said, of course, we would be happy to. So as I say, it's work to do that. It took a couple of years to get the system built. But once built, everyone was pretty convinced that we should have done a long time earlier. I mean, at the time we started, nobody could answer the question, for example, how many clinical trials does NIH support? Absolutely no one. I mean, like 100, 1,000, 2,000, 4,000? All of those numbers were offered. We started with 2,000 and quickly got to 4. Within a couple of years, got to 7,000 trials. And then a couple of other things happened. But I think we presently have 25,000 trials and probably from some 40 or 50 countries in addition to the U.S.
That's tremendous. How is the National Library of Medicine partnering with your physician? We will ask National Library of Medicine Director Dr. Donald Lindberg to explain this to us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.